All right. So, like I told you earlier, I had in my first session, obviously, I created an application that was fun to create, and you know, it works, right? The wine one, but I would spend a lot more time developing in a way that you're used to in an enterprise level development. So, in this session, what I wanted to do, or what I wanted to have them do, is show you guys a real working application that they're going to be putting into the marketplace, that they've implemented all these enterprise-level features in the phone to give you guys a good idea and a deeper understanding of some of the stuff you can do on the phone. So we've asked Falafel Software to come down and give you guys a run around their application. They are a consulting and training company headquartered in the Bay Area. They have offices in Colorado, Texas, Michigan, and South Carolina. And if you can help me welcome from Falafel, and I can't say that word. I keep trying. Falafel Software, Lino Tadros and John Waters.
Thanks.
I tried,
Thank
guys.
You.
I
Thanks.
Tried.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Hello, everybody. After lunch, best session of the day. All right. Well, it's a pleasure for us to be here to help with the launch of WP7. I'm very excited to be here with John Waters as well. And hopefully with the next hour, we can show you some work that we have done with the platform. And maybe after the next session, we'll be available for taking questions. And we'll also, there is a lot of members of the team here. You can actually ask us any questions you want during the day. We'll be available all over the place. So to start off, I'm just going to ask a question. How many of you have been to a conference, whether here in the United States or anywhere in the world, and you always had to count on this small little piece of paper in your name tag to find out where is the next session? And if they make a change, you have no idea, and you have to go to the food area to get a piece of paper saying, like, the room changed and all that stuff. So, well, with our phones now, you don't really need to look in there or set your favorites or find out what's going to happen. So what we decided to do, we created an application called Event Board. And Event Board, we can actually get feeds from all these different conferences, whether it's here in the United States, PDC, Tech Ed in Europe. There is one coming up next week, actually, in Bulgaria called the Microsoft DevReach Conference. There are so many of them, like Mix in Las Vegas, for instance. And the nice thing is that all of these mostly have OData feeds that you can actually bring in. So what we did, we actually created using SQL, Azure, and in the cloud, we get all that stuff. And then from the cloud, we're feeding these applications. And we've written one in WP7. And we're going to share with you today. So during this agenda, John is going to help us actually give you a demo of the application right away. And then we're going to talk about the platform and the architecture of the application itself, how you can get something like this working. We're going to talk also about the OData itself. Not too much. This is not going to be an OData session. I want to really spend the majority of the hour in Visual Studio 2010 and in Blend to give you some tips and tricks on how the whole thing works and how you can actually keep your eyes open also on MVVM, how you get a designer working with a developer and vice versa, and stuff like that. And at the end, we'll have an extra bonus to show you some of the code that we had to write to actually make all the stuff work in the cloud using also push notifications. All righty? So, John, why don't you go ahead and give us a demo of the application?
Sure. Thanks, Lino. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
I'm not going to be able to start out with a song here. I am going to start out with a demo, so may the demo gods be with me. What you see here is our application, the suitcase. This is event board as a tile. That's the 1 second required response to get something on the screen. And there's the other 19 seconds we have to get user input ready. So what it fetches initially is just a list of all the conferences that we support, and as Lena said, it just can be any conference that has an OData feed. And let's look at Silicon Valley Code Camp, which was just last weekend. And I know some of you guys were there and listened to us at that conference, too. Thanks for coming back. Now, when I go to one of these conferences, we pull down a lot of information about this conference. So we've got an overview of the conference that just tells you some basic facts about it. We have the news feed. And does anyone recognize what this control is we're using here? That's right, it's the Bananarama control. I always get that wrong. We've got the RSS feeds, and this is important because we actually have a cloud service that's watching these feeds, and when they change, we send out a notification to your phone. So typically, if there's a change of sessions, a change of rooms, that will be something that will be an RSS feed, and you'll get that notification directly on your phone. If the conference has a Twitter feed, we'll show you the top tweets here. You can drill down and see the rest of them. The conference could also have multiple other resources. It has a website, a Facebook, a LinkedIn. We just show whatever the conference has. If it doesn't have these sites, they're not there. And also, we can do a map. So the map here is a Bing map using the Bing map control that's built in, and which I'll be demoing at the end of this talk. We'll look at that code. And it just shows a simple push pin at the conference location. Nothing too fancy there. Now, some conferences have a Flickr feed. Actually, we're demoing the Flickr at the bottom of the screen here.
Actually, that we had one of our engineers spend a lot of time creating a storyboard to make this Flickr.
So if it has a Flickr feed, what you'll see here is all the photo sets from the Flickr. And this is from Mix. I'm sure you guys recognize this first person up here. And I can use gestures to flick back and forth between these photos. So at the end of this talk, I'll talk about how we do that too. So that's your basic overview information. It hasn't really helped you yet to find your session. So the meat of the application is this area. So different conferences have different ways of finding your sessions. Some of them are big conferences. They have tracks. Some of them are smaller. They just have tags. Usually there's speakers at conferences. sometimes you can go by agenda. You know, if you're 2 days into the conference, you're just interested in what's on today or what's on after lunch. So I can drill down into, say, speakers here. Here I'll get a list of all the speakers. I can search for a speaker. Let's go back to a conference that we spoke at. CodeCamp. For all you Microsoft people listening out here, if we could get the OData feed for PDC. So here we'll go by speaker. We see a speaker here called Barry. Barry is a very recognizable person. He's right there with his characteristic hat, second only to Scott Guthrie's red T-shirt. And I can drill down here. I can see what are Barry's sessions. He had 3 talks here. I can go into one of these talks. I see which room it's in. I can see what levels it's at. I can read about it. I can favorite this and add it to my favorites. And my list of favorites is stored on the phone. So here are my favorites. And the nice thing is that whether I'm online or not, this is actually saved in isolated storage on the phone. So I can have access to my favorites and my sessions, even if I lose my network connection. So that's pretty much the app in a nutshell. Is that something you guys would find useful at a conference? Yeah? Now, Lino, we actually wrote this app not just for the WinPhone. We wrote it for the iPhone and for the Android as well.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that I want to take a couple of minutes to reiterate what Matt Thompson said this morning, this is not an or. WP7 is not going to be an or, it's an and. So for us as a consulting and training company, we're not going to really make the choice for our customers which platform they should go with. So you can see that iPhone did extremely well in the last couple of years. They have a very, very nice looking UI. They are definitely very successful with that UI, and they definitely were able to make contact with their customers, the consumer. Android has been doing very well the last year. I mean, all the statistics coming out showing that Android is going very well, is even selling more than iPhone, actually, in the last few months as per month's quota for having these devices. So they're doing very well. Our experience for our customers when they come and ask us, for instance, like, we would like you to create a mobile app, they don't say we want on all of them, they have to pick one to start with, and it goes well. It says, okay, let's go to the second one, and let's go ahead and have all the major ones, the three or four major ones. Sometimes they stop at three. So number three, that's very important. All right? So we get to actually play with these tools for a long time now, trying to actually accommodate our customers. So we have the people in the company that will actually write the code for iPhone, for instance, and they use things like the Xcode using Objective-C, or we have, for instance, something like from the Novell team, like MonoTouch, writing in C-sharp for the phone as well. Android, we're using Java for on the Eclipse, or we can use the MonoDroid coming up as well. So all these things are available. What I wanted to tell you in here is that using the Visual Studio and Blend is an extremely different experience for developers. You know, we personally love Objective-C because we charge per hour. the idea here is that, unfortunately, I worked for development teams before. I worked for a company called Borland during the Delphi and C++ era and all these days. So I understand languages, I understand development tools, and so on. So when I find myself in 2010 sitting down with Objective-C doing my own malloc and dalloc, that actually gave me shivers. But you know what? The UI is pretty. They do very, very good job with their UI. I'll give them that. But the developer experience is way, way behind, over a decade behind, in my opinion. When you go to the Android, the kind of developers that actually use the product, there is no UI. You will never find a decent UI designer, for instance, for Android, because the Java and C++ mentality is like, forget that. I want to do it myself. Open up an XML editor in Vi, and I'm going to write my own UI, you know? That's fine. You can actually go download things like Droid Draw and all these other tools to help you. But reality is that it's concentrating on the code, not the experience itself, and you have to spend a lot of time doing that. When we get to Silverlight and Windows Phone 7, a lot of the engineers in our company have been doing Silverlight for over 2.5 years now, building major architecture for the military, for a lot of hospitals, for a lot of enterprise customers. So going to phones has been no-brainer. I mean, I know Barry goes to a lot of for a lot of our engineers that do Silverlight, he says, like, you're comfortable with Silverlight? Yes, you're a phone developer. You're done. You don't have to learn anything new. So go take a one-hour session just to find out all the ins and outs about the accelerometer and stuff like that, and you're good to go. So the experience, folks, being in Visual Studio 2010 and Blend is really takes it a completely different level, and it will hopefully bring everybody on board starting today, if this is your first time seeing this kind of stuff, how easy it is to build the application and how enjoyable it is, all right? If there's somebody at work that you don't like, let them go write Objective-C. Okay, sounds good. And at this point, John, if you can actually talk a little bit about the architecture of the application, and we'll take it from there.
Sure. So I have a few slides here in the beginning, and then, as Lino said, we'll be getting into some actual code. We'll be using Visual Studio. We'll be using Expression Blend. So all you manager types here can watch slides for a while, and you developers can sleep for a while. And then we'll switch around, and everyone gets some sleep. What you've seen here is just kind of the tip of the iceberg. It's the Windows Phone part of the whole system. But this is a business system, so it has a lot of other components. As we mentioned, it runs on other mobile devices, other smartphones. All of our infrastructure actually runs up in the Windows Azure cloud. Now, initially it didn't. It just ran on our own IIS servers, and it wasn't in Azure. But actually, Azure and mobile development make a great match, and I think the guys this morning were telling you about how they could so quickly get it going, get everything deployed and working up there. And it really is a good selling point, is that we can get these servers running 24/7 with very little effort without having to set up our own infrastructure. So what we have up there is we have a registration service, which is a simple WCF REST service that our phones, no matter what platform they're on, because it's REST and it's HTTP, it's very simple, they can register and say, I'm here, so that we know how to contact them with our push notifications. We also have an OData service, and I'll be talking more about OData in a while, an OData service that serves up this list of the available conferences, so when we add a new conference to our database, it shows up in the list. We also have some REST services that allow us to fetch the configuration of a conference, so an XML file that details, you know, where is the Facebook, where is the Twitter, where is the OData feed. All that stuff is actually, those files are in blob storage in the cloud. the database that this is stored in is a SQL Azure database. And there's also Microsoft stuff running up in the cloud, too, the Bing Maps, the push notifications, all of the billing. Now, the third part here is they're all the conferences. So these are all hosted by different people, right? So some of the Microsoft conferences, some of the Silicon Valley Code Camp conferences. They're not really affiliated with Falafel, but they have these public feeds. And all we need to have there to do this is an OData feed. So we have to have some way to extract the list of sessions, extract the list of speakers. And the other things are optional. They don't have to have a Facebook page or a Twitter page or a Flickr page. But if they have one, we'll put it in our metadata file, and we'll be able to show it on the device. And then the final part of the puzzle here is the app stores. That's where we download the applications onto your phones. That's where we push out updates. So I keep saying OData. And so I thought maybe I'd just spend a few minutes talking about what OData is. And to aid me, I have some of my own artwork. What is OData? Is it some new curse word? I wanted to have Captain Haddock here, but I couldn't.
Legal
reasons. Here's a simple answer. Here's OData. OData is a standard that's really catching on strongly. It's something that Microsoft has put a lot of effort into. Really, in its simplest form, you can see it's just a way of returning data as an XML file. It also has a JSON format. It works over HTTP. The data itself builds on the Atom Pub specification. It's very easy to read and parse it with a tool. If you look at the structure, it has a feed at the top. Then it has a series of entries. And then each entry has content, and inside the content are properties. The properties is where the meat of the data is. And if I look at these properties, I see there's an ID, which is this is a session feed. So it has a session ID, it has a title, and it has a description. So all I need to do to show this in the phone is be able to parse a file like this using link to XML, just as Daniel did. Yes.
Is that both OData?
There are a couple of namespaces defined at the top of the document. There's the M and there's the D namespace. You can actually see them right at the top there. So how do I get this OData? Well, this is a typical query. This is a Silicon Valley OData query, and typically what you'll have is kind of a base query, the .svc. It's very, very simple if you have, say, an entity framework model to expose that as an OData service. There's a wizard in Visual Studio, and it will just create the service for you. And then I can specify something that looks kind of like a SQL query. I've got a sessions overviews, and then I'm passing in filter equals CodeCamp year ID equals 5, which means I want to get all the sessions for a certain CodeCamp year this year. I have a select statement here that's saying I want to select ID, title, description, start time. So there could be 30 fields in this feed, but I'm really only interested in 5, so I'm not going to bring them all down and consume all of that network bandwidth I don't need. And I'm ordering these by start time, so I'm going to get them ordered in a particular order when they're retrieved. Very simple. A few closing words on OData. OData.org is a great place to start. You don't have to use OData to do WinPhone development. There's all kinds of ways to get data into your phone. I think you'll be seeing some more ways later on today. You saw some this morning as well. But it is a very happening technology. And because it's a format that tools easily understand, you'll see support for this in Excel. You'll see support for it in Visual Studio has a visualizer. There's lots of third-party components that are free that you can explore OData. And something that I'm really excited about is this project codenamed Dallas. Who's heard of that? A few people? So Microsoft is putting up this kind of data mart in the cloud where you can find all kinds of different data. It can be census data, geographic data, business data, maps. Some of it's free, some of it's paid for. You can browse, you can search for data sets, you can explore sample data, you can download it and see what the data's like. And then if you like the data, you can either get it if it's free or you can purchase it. So what they're doing is they're making a wealth of information available to everyone in this simple format. So if you guys understand how to read OData, you can build apps that can do amazing things, because many times your apps can only be as amazing as the data they can get. And that's a difficult thing for a developer, is to have access to all that data. And I think this will be an important part of that picture. Okay. My last portion of slides here is we're going to get into actually using Visual Studio and Expression Blend. And there's a pattern for how to develop software called MVVM. How many people have heard of that? Okay, it's really catching on a lot. Again, this isn't something you have to do. You don't have to use MVVM to write phone applications. Some of the sample projects start you out down an MVVM-ish path. But it's really a practice. You can use it or not. You can use it outside of phone development, certainly. You can use it in other kinds of development. It makes a great fit. And so I'm going to take a little time just to explain the concepts. So first of all, what are these letters, MVVM? Well, M is the model, V is the view, and VM is the view model. And I don't expect you guys to be able to read those pictures there. So the model. The model you can think of as, this is kind of the data. This is the back end. These are your entities. It could be something you fetch from a database. It could be something you fetch from Entity Framework. It could be, in our case, we're parsing these OData feeds, and we're creating instances of these classes. So we're creating sessions, tracks, speakers. We want to have these strongly typed objects in our system because it makes it a whole lot easier to develop if we have that kind of object to build on. Now, the model isn't always exactly what you need in the UI. So the V here is the UI, it's the view. And the V, you can see that in different ways. You can see it as XAML, which is the language you'll be using for Silverlight development, the same as in WPF. Or you can see it as the design time view that you see in Visual Studio or Expression Blend. The way to get really productive in development on this platform is to understand binding. Binding is really the key to making things declarative. So you want to be able to declare your code in XAML and write as little C# right now as possible. So what you can see here is my view here in the XAML is binding to different things. I'm binding to something called speakers.view. I'm binding to something called isExpanded. I'm binding to something called image URL on demand. Now, the view has needs to bind to things that are not necessarily part of your model. For instance, we have favorites. We store the favorites on our phone. Those aren't part of the back-end system. There's no concept of favorites in these different conferences. It's something that we add on. So we have a isFavorite property on a session, but it's not in the model. It's something the view needs. Right here, I'm expanded. Lino has collapsed. Actually, he looks expanded still, but he will be soon.
Ex-employee.
I'll be collapsed. That's not part of the model. Is expanded. That's a view concept. We can't be putting that in the model. So VM, the view model. That's the piece that glues the model and the view together. And you can see it as it wraps the model and it adds on the things we need for it to play nicely with the view. So here's my speaker view model. And it has an isExpanded property. Here's my app view model. It has a speakers property that I can bind to. And one of the key things to know about binding and view models is this iNotify property changed interface that I'm implementing up here on all my view models. The idea is that whenever something changes in your view model, you raise this event, this property changed event, saying what changed. And because your view is binding to this property, it then knows, aha, something has changed in my view model. I need to refresh myself. So for instance, if I change the image URL, the image that's bound to it will know to go get the new image and render that image. Now, there are two kinds of view models here. There's these kinds of view models that wrap our model. There's a special kind of a view model here called the app view model. The app view model has kind of two purposes. You can see it as a container that contains all of the other view models. So it's got a list of session view models. It's got a list of speaker view models. You can also see it as a representation of the application itself. It makes the application something that's programmable, something that's testable. You can put all the logic that you might normally be tempted to put in different views. You can put that in the app view model as a great place to keep all of the business logic for the application itself. So the logic that will fetch an OData feed, the logic that will fetch tweets, all these different things that need to happen, you can put that logic into the app view model, into different methods. And of course, you don't have to have one monolithic app view model. You can still break it down. But conceptually, the app view model is the container of all of the other data, and it's the thing that you program against. So that's enough slides for managers.
So I'm going to go now. Actually, I wanted to add one thing, if you wouldn't mind, John. I remember the old days when actually we used to write code and we have a designer in the company. We used to tell him, like, hey, go ahead and create me a nice gradient button and whatever. You don't need to know what is it going to do. And then send it to me, and then I'm going to take that XAML, put it in my Visual Studio, double-click it, and now I'm going to go write some C-sharp code to let it do something. That model actually is changing, folks, because you have designers that really know how to put the UI together, and you are actually the coder or the architect that really need to concentrate on this view model and so on. And I've seen something happening in the last year in our company, which is great. The developers are not the one that put the application together. It means John, for instance, will go write the functions of the view model, something like get customers or get sessions or get speakers. Have no idea how is it going to look at the end. But if it's done as view model, our designer who does not know C sharp, probably he's watching us right now, no C sharp.
Hey, man.
Can open up in Blend, and if you open up the model, he can see actually all the functions, get customer, insert customer, whatever. Don't need to know how it's implemented. There is a name there. And now we can create actually the button and drag that view model and drop it on the button, and it's running. It's function. Now when you run this button in Blend, it will call the function in the view model. So actually the designers now are the one building the applications. We are just going to be code monkeys going in the future. All right? But it's a different mentality. If you remember the old days, go do this for me and give it to me in an email and I'll open it up, put it in the project. That stuff really doesn't happen anymore. With view model, you can actually have other people putting together the final app as long as the functionality isn't there.
That's a great point. I think you'll see as I go through more of the detail of the code how that actual interplay comes into play. Well, so the events are raised from the view model. The other direction is commands. And I think in Silverlight 3, the command support isn't what it is in Silverlight 4, where there's a much better support for that. This particular UI doesn't actually have that need, so we haven't even implemented it in here. Anyone want to see some code?
Yes.
Okay. This isn't code. This is a slide. Okay, Visual Studio. So we've talked about binding, and what I want to show you now is how we can apply these concepts of the MVVM to the design time experience to build an application that I can get this kind of design time experience where I'm in Visual Studio, I'm looking at my data that I'll be seeing when I run the application. I'm able to work in a much more productive way because it's right there, and I don't have to run the app to see what it looks like. So let's take it from the top. First of all, binding starts with the data context. The data context sets kind of the scene for what I'm binding to, the root object of the binding. And it flows down the visual tree of the page. So at the top of each of my pages up here, I'm declaring a data context and saying that it's going to be something called a static resource app view model. I'll show you guys what that is in a minute. But I'm setting the scene, and I'm basically saying, for this page, the binding context is my application view model. Now, you remember the application view model, off to the right here, has that speakers. It's the container, so it has that list of speaker view models. So that means that further down in the page, where I have my list box, here's my speakers list box, I can set the item source to bind to that speakers. I can do that because the context of the page is the app view model, and speakers is a property of the app view model. I'll go further down here, and I'll see something called a data template, which I'll talk more about in a while. The data template is a piece of XAML that's basically repeated once for each row in this list. So as the list is being rendered, as it's rendering John Waters, it takes this XAML to create that list item. And so the binding context when you're in a list is the item that you're currently binding to. So if we look down further down here, I'm binding to image URL, to website. I think somewhere up here I can find. The name of the speaker. Let's see here. Anyone see it? Speaker name, anyone? There it is. So full name, bio, all these things are attributes on my speaker view model. And because the context of this list item right now is that instance of a speaker view model, I can bind to those properties. So let's take a look at this static resource app view model. How many people here are Silverlight developers? Quite a few. WPF? So you've seen these static resources before. And basically what it is you're referencing something that's declared in a resource dictionary somewhere. In our case, that resource dictionary is in the application itself. So this is the app.xaml page. So think of the app.xaml, I think Daniel was saying, to think of it like the global.asax. Think of it as kind of the application. And in the application, I have a resource dictionary. Here it is. The first thing I do in my resource dictionary is I create an instance of my app view model. And I give it a key, app view model, so I can find it in my dictionary. That's the key I was referring to in my phone application page. This is a singleton. There's one instance of this app view model in the application. There's not one for every page. There's just one of them. It's created pretty much on this line of code when it's first referenced in this dictionary. It's created in design time as well as in runtime. So just by having this code here, I'm creating an instance of this app view model, and I'm able to reference it from every other page in design time as well. Now, not everything, sadly, can be done in XAML. I do have to write some code. And so I need to be able to reference a singleton instance of the view model in my code. So what I'll do is I'll search for it in my resources by this key and just return it as a static property of my application. So here's my application object. It now has a view model property. I'll go back to my speaker list, and you'll see that when the page is loaded, I'm asking the app.viewModel speakers has items. If it doesn't have any items, I'm going to ask the app.viewModel to load these speakers. So now I'm programming this singleton instance of my app view model in C#. So you've seen me referring it to in XAML, referring it to in C#. It's that same one instance of the app view model. So So now for the magic. I've got the scene set. You understand MVVM, hopefully. You understand binding. You understand how I've created this singleton app view model. How do I get that data to show up?
I want the people actually to pay very good attention to this, because usually if you're inside of the designer, you're not going to see real data coming from the database. There will be only a placeholder in the designer. So this is a very neat trick here, so your designer can see real data during design time. So go for it.
So okay, first of all, we have a very helpful property here in the component model namespace. There's a get designer properties. Get is in design mode, and it will simply return true if you're in design mode. That doesn't matter if you're in Visual Studio or if you're in Expression Blend. It will return true. So I know if I'm in design mode or not. How do I use that? Well, here's the constructor of my one singleton app view model that's shared across all the pages. And I check, am I in design mode? Yes, I am. Okay, let's create some sample data. What do I do in create sample data? Here's a speaker. I'm creating a speaker called John. I'm setting up the properties, and setting up the bio, and setting up the image URL. I'm creating a speaker called Lino. I'm adding these speakers. I'm wrapping them in speaker view models. I'm saying that John's going to be expanded. Lino still isn't. I'm adding Barry over there, too. He escaped. Where did he go to? There he is. I then go ahead and add everything else that I possibly need to see in design time. I'm adding days, I'm adding tracks, I'm adding the Flickr handle, I'm adding the coordinates of the conference. Anything that is data that I will need to see in some page of my application, I throw it all into this load sample data. So here's how it comes together. I'll go back to my speaker list. That's the data I've defined when I create my sample data. What if I go and change my sample data? You know what? I'm going to say that I am not going to be expanded. Lino's going to be expanded. And actually, he prefers to be called Lino and not Elaine. Now, this is a code change, so I'm going to have to compile this change. Voila.
Much nicer. Much.
Lino X expanded. His name is corrected. I've changed my data. So with this approach, I can figure out what data I need to put in my sample data to make my application really illustrate how it's going to be used. Now, the beauty of it is that my designer can now open up Expression Blend. So let's save this change, and I'll open up Expression Blend. I have the same design time experience of sample data in Expression Blend. Actually, if I go back and change it to the way it used to be, changes back in Blend as well.
Do you see, folks, the importance of something like this? Because if we haven't done this design time piece, your Blend designer, when they run this stuff, they're not going to see any data, just placeholders. So they cannot really help you find out, like, how I'm going to do the margins and I'm going to do the padding on how the instance between the image and whatever. But if you give them some sample data, if they fix that in Blend on this one instance, when you load at runtime with the real database, everything will inherit that stuff. So it's important to spend some very little time on the design sample data.
What we'll see actually is, before we could do this, the designer would actually fire up Expression Blend and create something that looks just like this. But it wouldn't be that useful for us developers, because it would just be, well, in the old days, it would just be a picture. But then we got better, and our designers could actually create XAML. But it would just be rectangles and images and text all thrown into this design surface. It would look just like this. It would look wonderful. But then, as a developer, you take this and go, well, how am I going to get, you know, this portion into my list box data template? And it would be full of ipsum lorems, and the data wouldn't be quite realistic data for your application. So while the mock-up looked great, when you actually put your real data in it, it doesn't. So we just eliminated all of those misinterpretations and redos and reworks, and we're just both working with the exact same model with our different tools, and our designer can be happy here to use Expression Blend, and the developer can be happy to use Visual Studio. I think that's pretty cool. So I'm going to show you some other ways where you can save time and not have to write so much code and have your application actually look pretty good without really exerting yourself too much. I'm going to talk about styles. I'm going to talk about templates, talk about some built-in controls. So you've seen our application now. It has this kind of Metro theme. It uses the fonts that Jason was talking about. I'm sure he's screaming inside somewhere here when he's seeing this. It's not right. But it's pretty close, you got to admit. How do we get it to look that good? Is that a lot of work for us? Well, first of all, let me tell you, there's a lot of stuff to look at. I know you can't read this text. The slides will be available. You'll be able to copy paste it. My point is that there is a file that has all of the predefined styles in it. And here it is. So you'll see it starts out with simple things like colors. It defines what the colors are. It defines text box colors, radio box, checkbox colors. It goes on to get to be more complicated. It will start defining brushes. Many times these brushes then build on the basic colors. Then it gets into things like fonts, font sizes, font families. And then it starts building more complex things like text block styles, which sounds like a Dr. Seuss tongue twister. text block style, text block base style. And each of these styles builds on other styles. You can just use these styles throughout your application. You can reference static resource and then put one of these names like phone text subtle style. If
are those all custom?
These are all built into the phone. I'm just showing you how they're defined.
So those are all available?
Yes.
Yeah, this is a XAML file that comes with the phone. It's available in a specific directory that you can open up and take a look at all that stuff.
So if you use these, because sometimes it's, you don't have code completion on these styles, so when you're trying to choose them, you're like, what do I have here? There is a file you can look at and understand, and you can use these things. And if you do, when the user does things like changes their theme or changes their accent color, your application will actually pick it up, and it will play very nicely within the Windows phone experience. Now, usually you'll go one step beyond that, and you'll want to define an application-specific style. Now, that's a great place to do that. It's the same resource dictionary that we put the app view model in. It's in the application. The things defined in there can be referenced from every page in the application. What we did here is we defined something like the phone text list box title style. So that's a style that's going to be used in every list box that has a title. So let's go and fiddle around with that style and see what happens to our application. You will notice that with XAML, it's very verbose, and it takes a little navigation here. Subtitle, okay, here we go. I'm going to make the foreground of all of my titles green. Excellent choice, right? It's the reason why I'm not the designer.
Thank God.
I made this one change in my application style. This is going to go throughout the whole application. All of my titles are now going to be green, like it or not. So this is how, if you decide later on, you know what, I want them purple, you don't have to go and change that in every single screen in your app. You just change this. Think of it maybe as a bit like style sheets. You know, it's a place to centralize your styles. The other part you can do to really simplify styling things is using templates. So each control has a control template that you can use to alter the appearance and the behavior of the control. It also has things like data templates that allow you to specify how it's going to lay out its contents. These data templates are kind of fun. So we'll look at this data template that we have for the speakers. We'll get a bit adventurous here. So first of all, I'm going to just get rid of this data template that I've defined. Gone. Why am I seeing this? Anyone? The default to string, someone said. Yeah. So now I have nothing defined. I have not specified what I'm going to render. I have not specified what I'm going to bind to. The default behavior is for the list box to bind to the toString of the items in the list, and that's what I get. So that's no good. So let's go in here and say, let's create a data template. Great. I lost all my data. Well, I have to start telling the whole story. What am I going to be doing here? So I'll create a stack panel, which is a simple component that will order things top to bottom or left to right. And in there, I'll put a text block. And the text will be a binding. So I will bind this to the full name. Voila. Because I'm using my sample data, I now see something. I see what I'm doing. If I didn't, it would still be black. I'd have to run the app and see what happens. So, okay, I'm on a roll here. I'll add another one. I'm going to put my bio in here. Okay, that looks bad. It's gone off to the side of the screen. I need to wrap that. Okay, it's a wrap. I can do this. I can work in XAML. I can type in design time. I can see what the results are. At some point, I might get tired of this and say, you know what? If I'm going to do design, I'm going to fire up expression instead. So here I am. I've got the same data. I can go up and go to my speakers. And here's my data template. Now I can go in here visually and say, you know what, I'm going to change this margin.
It's called gutter. It's called gutter now.
The gutter. I've now created a gutter. I'll say this is going to be italic, and it's going to be larger, and I'm going to get fired as a designer pretty soon here. You know what, it's going to be green, and it's getting pretty nice now, huh?
In case we didn't tell you, if you need any purple design, we are the company to hire. For
so I think, is Jason still in the room here?
No, he hung himself.
So feeling pretty pretty queasy at this point. But the point is, if I were our designer, I could actually make this look good now with real data. And when I'm done and I hit save, and my developer reloads this, we're done. There is no additional work to be done.
Yes. You're hired.
Okay. I'm going to revert back to the somewhat normal look. Bear with me. Okay. Whew. I'm going to do a quick whirlwind tour of some of the built-in controls that help you build an app like ours in no time. And I'm not kidding. The basic app here took me, guess how long to write? 6 weeks? A couple of hours.
We're good, but not that good.
Okay, It took me 60 hours. It took me a week and a half.
Something with six.
You win now, the phone seven.
This is my night job. When the kids go to sleep, this is what I get to play with. I'm not a Silverlight developer. I'm actually the president of the company. I collect invoices. I could hammer this out in 60 hours without being a really experienced Silverlight developer. I added on things like Flickr and Maps and Tweets. Each of those things took about a day to do. And that's because I can leverage a lot of stuff that's out there for me to use. And if you're smart, that's what you're going to do. You're going to figure out, what do I want in my app? And then you're going to figure out who wrote this already, and you're going to integrate it into your app. So first of all, the Bing Maps. These are in the release version of the phone, SDK. And surprisingly, I put them in the map.xaml. Same concepts. I'm setting the data context of this page to be my app view model as usual. And then further down here, you'll find there's a map control. And the map control has a binding to the conference location. The conference location is a property of my app view model. And here it is. So I put in a longitude and a latitude in my view model. That happens to be something that makes sense. And now, in design time, my map is centered on that location. Now, this push pin here is, quite simply, a push pin. So I add a push pin to my map. Again, I bind it to the conference location. Those of you who are really still awake, anyone? May notice that the push pin isn't in the center of the map. Well, if Microsoft can tell me about that a little. They're bound to the same coordinate.
That it's push in the center of the panorama.
Now, that push pin has a template defined here as a resource, push pin control template 1. You'll find that in this page. It's right here. All it is a canvas with an image in it. So I've defined my custom pushpin template, and I can see it in design time almost in the right place. Now, I could add a lot of functionality to this in no time. There are web services out there. I can get my location on the phone. I can geocode these addresses. I can go from street addresses to coordinates. There's a route service I can call that will give me turn-by-turn directions. I can draw those as an overlay on top of the map. I can very easily actually say, how do I get to this conference from where I am right now? That kind of stuff, hugely useful for your users. Very little code to write. The Bananarama control. This is one of the central controls in our application and in many applications, the kind of the hub feel. This is built in too. You'll see there's a panorama control. I have, again, my page set to bind to my app view model. Here's a panorama item. It just binds to the about strings, which is a list of strings that I bind to this list to make look pretty. Then I go to the news. Notice as I click on news, notice, first of all, it has a lovely green color. But also notice that the design time experience changes. Now I'm looking at that panorama item, and I've got my design time data, so I can see what it looks like. I'll go down, I'll click on Twitter. Here's the design time experience on my tweets. I need to get rid of this green, seriously.
I kind of like it.
So I can get all of this functionality in this panorama just by laying out my different sections as panorama items, binding them to different parts of my view model. I'm really done at that point. It's all declarative. There is no complicated programming going on to get this panorama to behave. Finally, there's other stuff out there. Microsoft has some great controls in the SDK. There's some other sources. Flickr. There's a Flickr.net API that's available on Coplex. It has some simple calls. You just include the assembly in your application. You can download a list of photo sets. Each photo set item has a property for the thumbnail. You just bind that property to an image, and you're done. You can then drill down into a photo set and get all of the images inside of that photo set, which is what's happening here on the right. Now, you'll notice that these are laid out a little differently. They scroll off to the right, they wrap around and come back. That's not your normal list behavior. So there's something in the Silverlight toolkit called the wrap panel, which will do that for you. It will take your list items, it will go left to right until it gets to the width of your control, and then it will wrap around and start over again. So if we look at the overview page, we go down to the Flickr, you'll see that the items panel of the list box has the items panel template being the wrap panel. So just by referencing the toolkit, tweaking this one property to say, this is how I'm going to wrap my items in my list box, I get this complex behavior. You also notice this is the design time experience you get if you're not doing the whole design time data and view model approach. Not that helpful. The reason is Flickr.net doesn't have any setters on its objects and no constructor. I can't create these mock photo sets to bind to. The author of Flickr.net has kindly decided to add those into the next release, so we'll be able to see what we're doing here. Another great thing you'll find in the toolkit is gesture support. So we'll look at the Flickr page. And so this has, again, no design time experience. So this is what it looks like when you don't have this nice setup. But as you saw when I was demoing it, I could flick the images to the next image. So that's a gesture. A gesture is a flick, a drag, a pan, you know, a pinch. There's a neat little component here, and if you look in my code, my image here has a gesture service listener, and that's a component in the toolkit. You place it on one of your controls, it raises events, so it has a flick event it raises. And in that flick event, what I do is I find out from a parameter if I flicked left or flicked right, and depending on that, I either add one or subtract one from the selected index of my list. And if I go off the end of my list, I wrap around to the other side. So that's really all my code here is doing, is it's just wrapping around the list. It looks like a lot of code, but that's what it is. It has a drag delta event. So when I'm dragging something with my finger, this fires off while I'm dragging. And my image has a render transformation. And so you can have things like translate transformations for moving. You can have scale transforms. You can have rotation transforms. I have a translate transform. And all I do is I manipulate the X component of that transform to be the same as my drag delta. And that has the effect of me pulling that image. So that's all the code I need to flick and drag images. Okay, I started a bit late. We're running a bit late. I'll do a brief foray into push notifications and Azure. Hope you're still all awake. Push notifications. You get them all the time. You get voicemails. You get emails. There could be other kinds of emails here. This could be a really bad day. I've got a hurricane headed my way. My bank account is overdrawn. My mother-in-law is bugging me. We do this on all the different devices. We do it on the iPhone, the Android, and we do it on the Wind phone. Microsoft has a Microsoft push notifications infrastructure built out there that's pretty simple to use. The components that we have here, we have the phones. We have something running up in the cloud. In our case, what it's doing is it's looking for changes to RSS feeds, and when it finds one, it's pushing it out to all the phones. We have some data up there. That could be our data. It could be someone else's data. If you're writing a bank service and you're going to push out overdrafts, then that data would be, you know, the bank accounts and the customers. Most often or not, in this day and age, that data is somewhere else. You know, it's Flickr or some API you're using to watch the data. And then we have the actual push notification service, which is the infrastructure to push these messages out to the devices. Those services are, in the Microsoft case, they run in the Windows Azure cloud. They're all HTTP-based. They're very simple to program. You can use, you know, your usual .NET programming skills. The cloud, we've already seen how the cloud is involved in our application. It's where we have the registration of our devices. It's where we look at the conference fees. It's where we supply information about what conferences we support.
How long did it take you, John, to do the Azure part?
Well, guess this again.
Anybody could guess how long, when the application was done using our own services, using SQL Azure and pushing the whole service itself on the Azure cloud itself, how long do you think it took? I remember very clearly, John, because it happened at 2:30 in the morning.
You know, it was a couple of nights. It was a pretty quick move. If you know SQL Server 2008, you pretty much know SQL Azure. If you know web development, if you can do things like web services, if you can do REST services or just web pages, you know how to do Azure development. So it leverages, again, a whole skill set that you already have. So you guys come from Silverlight, you come from WPF, you can develop for the phone. You guys come from IIS development, you come from writing services in middle tiers, you can do Azure. The nice thing is actually Visual Studio integrates this pretty nicely into your solution. So here's the solution we've been looking at so far. It's this viewer component, which is the Silverlight phone app. Well, up here I have a cloud service in my solution. So I have things called roles. There's a worker role and a web role. So worker role is think of the worker role as a service. It's a background task that runs and does stuff, not necessarily interactively. And the web role is what you'd think of as something in IIS, either web pages or WCF services. So in our solution here, we have these two defined. My worker role has, you know, its run method where it does its busy work and then has a nap, just like you guys. The web role defines our different services. So we have our OData endpoint, we have our WCF REST services. We make these simple so that all our different clients can communicate with them, whether they're coming from Java or if they're Objective-C. Try and stay away from SOAP. Try and keep these things kind of lightweight and simple so they will work cross-platform. What's nice is I can make this cloud service my startup project, and I can hit run. And what Visual Studio does is it deploys and packages this whole cloud solution into something called a development app fabric. Who's done Azure development here? A few people? So this is pretty nice. I just hit a breakpoint here in my worker role. So I can debug this on my local machine. I can iron out all the kinks in the logic. Then I can migrate the database up to SQL Azure. I can migrate my storage up to blob storage. And then finally, I'll take this big leap of faith and I actually migrate my application into the cloud. That's when it gets a bit scary, because now it's up there running somewhere, and it's not one of these platform infrastructure things where you can remote desktop in and see what's going on. It's just kind of up there in the cloud. It's kind of like living in Capitola, except that's the fog. Probably like San Francisco, too. So Visual Studio adds in some nice pieces here as well. There's a server explorer. You can actually explore your different resources in the cloud. You can see what instances are running. You can see their status. You can actually right-click on your cloud service and publish it straight up to the cloud. You can publish it to your staging area or to your production area. Once it's running there, you can right-click on one of your running roles, and you can download the IntelliTrace logs. Who's heard of IntelliTrace?
It's the coolest thing in the world.
It's very, very useful, because you have a limited amount of debugging capability up there in the cloud, and if something goes wrong and you need to diagnose it, You can download that log. It will show you the exceptions. You can click on an exception. You can see the whole call stack. What's even cooler is you can actually follow that call stack in your code back and forth.
It only works in Ultimate.
So, but what's $10,000 between friends, really?
It's an awesome feature. It's been very helpful for me to debug problems once you get it into the cloud. So that pretty much wraps it up for me. I've tried to show you kind of the OData, fetching data, the MVVM, what the concepts are, how to apply that in design time to set up your data binding, to have your sample data. I've shown you how to use styles, how to use controls to be really productive and get a lot of stuff done without writing a whole lot of code. And I've given you a brief tour of some of the built-in controls, push notifications, and Windows Azure. And that's kind of what makes up a whole enterprise solution, is the mobile part and the cloud. Thank you.
Daniel?